Good morning, Waiheke. Welcome to Island Life, your weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. This show is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua. That's the place to go for all of your barbecue and Christmas meat needs. So thank you very much for their support for the show. Today we're doing a post-election special. I caught up with Denise Roche, who's newly elected to Parliament, Green MP from Waiheke. I talked to her the day after the election. I'll be playing that interview this morning. And I also talked to Alan Davies, who stood for New Zealand First, another Waihekean, and we get his reflections on the election process as well. And of course, the Opinionated Islanders will be in this morning, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, and they'll be giving us their opinion of the election and its outcomes. Well, it's the day after the general election, and I'm here with Denise Roche, Waiheke's newest MP, and a new Green MP coming in, 10.6%?
Yeah, I think it was, and there's still the specials to count too, so we always do quite well on those, so hopefully we'll get another MP from that.
So tell me how you felt when you woke up this morning, the day after the election, and you're an MP.
Well, actually, I woke up and it was like Christmas. Like, yesterday was the day before Christmas, and last night it was just too exciting, really. So I'm still just trying to figure out how it all fits together. We had our first caucus meeting this morning by conference call, which is pretty exciting. 13 MPs, Green MPs, the most we've ever had. And now I've just got to figure out what happens next, and it's all a bit overwhelming, really.
So up until a week or two ago, it was looking like you wouldn't make it into Parliament. And then, you know, over the last couple of weeks, those polls have lifted and we've kind of seen it get up, you know, to the kind of heady heights of, you know, between 10 and 15%. And in the end, you've come through at around 10 or 11. So your feelings about the election must have changed somewhat over the last couple of weeks.
Well, I've been involved with the National Exec for the last year, so I've been in quite a good position to be able to have a little bit of an overview above the campaign, if you like, as well as campaigning across Auckland and in Auckland Central. Our aim right from the start was to get 10%, and I believe that we actually did that because our electorate, if you like, the people who are party voting Green, are becoming more aware that we're a safe pair of hands for the environment as well as the economy. So we've been very, very principled and very disciplined, mostly, about our campaign. So I was really thrilled that it came through.
And what are your feelings on the election results overall?
Well, I was quite surprised by the level of support for National. When I was door knocking and campaigning, I wasn't getting that much of a signal that it would be such a big cakewalk, if you like. But you know, maybe I'm just sort of crazily optimistic about these things, though. Maybe I wasn't that realistic in the first place. The one that really did surprise me was New Zealand First. The campaign started really late. He came from nowhere, and he just grabbed the day. I think the teapot tapes really worked into his favour, Winston's favour as well. But wow, that's quite a surprise to me. So I'm pleased that there are some surprises, some disappointments. I'm sad that Labour didn't do as well as everybody would have hoped, I guess, on the left. But yeah, no, it's been quite an amazing sort of few weeks, really.
So what happens now? You've been elected, you know, you still have a swearing in and all the rest of it. Do you know what you do?
I'm starting to find out. I've had my first call from Parliamentary Services today, and I'm expected in Wellington on Tuesday, which is when induction starts. So there's all that sort of stuff to come to terms with. At the same time, I need to find out what to do about the Waiheke Local Board.
Yeah, and we'll come back to that. Have you had any kind of preparations or briefing or warnings about what to expect as life as an MP?
I checked in with various ex-MPs quite recently, actually, and was talking with Laila Hare last night, who just said, you know, just be prepared to work really hard. And that's the thing with small parties, the MPs do work really hard. So I'm thrilled to be joining a team of really talented people who really push for good green policy and good solutions. I think I'll be all right. I hope so. I'm prepared to work hard anyway.
So you're going into a parliament where the Greens are going to be firmly in opposition with a very, very strong government, you know, who are claiming a very strong mandate for some policies that you probably don't agree with. But, I mean, this isn't your first time in politics. Your experience in local body politics, both on the, you know, the local board and the council, you've effectively been in opposition there. So what are the techniques, or what are the things you think it needs to be an effective opponent in that kind of situation?
Well, the Greens have always been in opposition, if you like. They've never actually been part of a government. But having said that, we've still managed to achieve quite a lot of policy gains. And this time will be no exception. There are some things that we will be opposing to the max, like asset sales, like any measures that make life harder for the poor and the dispossessed, particularly the kind of beneficiary bashing that we've seen coming through in National Party policy. So we will be strongly in opposition on those issues. Where we may be able to make some gains is around memorandums of understanding around potentially environmental issues, because the National has always had this, well, for the last few years particularly, has had this nod to the environment with the blue greens that they've set up, and certainly the MP who's been returned to Auckland Central, Nikki Kaye, classifies herself as an environmentalist. So I'm pretty confident that Greens will be able to work with National Party, and with the National Government to advance as many policies as we possibly can.
And are you concerned about the ability of the left and, say, of Labor to rebuild and to mean that there's an opportunity at the next election to bring about the kind of change that you'd like to see in the Greens?
We were pretty clear right from the start, from our AGM in June, that we would have preferred a coalition or some sort of relationship with Labor in Parliament, leading the government, rather than National, and that it was highly unlikely that we would form that sort of relationship with National. I am certainly very disappointed at the poor showing for Labor. I note again this year that there has been another major drop-off in people turning out to vote, and that always disadvantages the left. It certainly does. So obviously we've got to be doing something a lot more radical to get people interested in local in politics. So yeah, we've got quite a lot more work to do on that, I think, and I think Labor's got a lot more work to do as well to become what they were in the past.
You picked up a fair old number of electorate votes, enough that if they'd gone to Jacinda Ardern would have taken her over the line. Any reflection on that and how that came about and why people would have done that?
I actually talked about it with Jacinda this morning. My personal vote halved this time, which is good, but our party vote increased by percentage and increased by numbers as well. And the sense I was getting, and because we were running a one-tick campaign, which was party vote to get me in as an MP, but party vote to get Green MPs in, I don't see it as that I was deliberately attempting to split the vote. The margin between both Jacinda and Nikki this time is very small. It's a third of what it was between Nikki and the previous MP, Labour MP, Judith Tizard. So it's only 535 votes. There's still the specials to come in yet as well. So goodness, anything could happen.
Now, when you do get down to Wellington, the Greens tend to run a caucus where people have portfolio specialisation. And have you had any thought or talks about what area you might be focusing on?
What we need to do as a caucus is look at our different skill sets. There are some pretty obvious ones for me, but you know, I'm a newbie, so basically we have to kind of work out what each of us are doing. My areas of interest is waste. And I'd be really keen to look at amending the Waste Minimisation Act, which was a Green Party Act, by the way, to make it stronger. And I would like to work on Auckland issues and particularly the super city issues. And I'm pleased that we've got another Auckland MP to add to the mix for the Greens, because we've been a bit understaffed up here in terms of representation. So between us, we should be able to be an effective voice for Auckland, I hope. And I'm quite keen to work cross-party to try and support the Mayor's vision for the 30-year plan.
And this is going to bring about big changes on the home front. Have you had time to kind of start to come to terms with that and think about what that might mean?
No. we've been talking about it. As the polls got sort of higher and higher, and it became more possible that I would become an MP, we talked about how we'd manage that. In the last few weeks of the campaign, I was basically out all the time, campaigning 7 days a week, right through to the evenings, as well as trying to do my local board and family duties. And so my family have been incredibly supportive. We wouldn't have taken this track, but I wouldn't have done it by myself. This is something that was a family decision, so I'm feeling confident that we'll be able to maintain our relationships, but yeah, it's going to be a massive change. Commuting from Wellington to Waiheke is going to be, yeah, quite a trip.
And you're going in, I suppose, you know, you're not the first MP from Waiheke, and Sandra Lee has already commented, you know, about how pleased she is to see another Māori woman entering Parliament. So do you feel that the weight of expectation on your shoulders?
Oh, a little bit, yeah. But, you know, when I was elected as the city councillor, I was nominated by the Koro Kato Kaufuta and endorsed by the Marae Committee. And when I was elected, the last pōwhiri that he officiated at was to bring me across the paupai and to put a korowai on my shoulders, and I still feel that cloak and that responsibility. Waiheke's my home, and I hope that I'll be able to represent our best interests in Parliament as well, so I won't be shirking that responsibility, and it is a great honour. It really is. I'm quite humbled by it.
And finally, what does all of this mean for your position on the local board? Have you considered what you're doing there?
Yeah, I've had one brief exchange of emails this morning, because there's a couple of people within the Super City who've been elected, and that includes Tracy Martin from New Zealand First, who's on the Rodney local board, and Andrew Williams as well. So for New Zealand First, I believe. So between us all, we're going to have to... I think there'll be by-elections, and there should be, because that's the most democratic way to do it. I just need to figure out when I resign. I want to attend the next board meeting in order to give my resignation and to do that in a public way. You know, I was elected by the people of Waiheke. I believe I should be at a public meeting to offer my resignation.
Well, thank you very much, Denise, and congratulations. And we wish you all the very best in what we hope will be a lengthy career as a Green MP.
I have a lot to thank Waiheke for, Chris. I mean, this is where I've started my political career, and it's my base, and it's the place that I come back to and I feel safe in. The people here are pretty amazing. They do keep you honest, and they keep you on the straight and narrow. So I look forward to seeing people on the ferry, you know, bailing me up and having conversations with me, and I just, yeah, I'm really thrilled to be doing this. So thank you, Waiheke.
Waiheke Radio. Well, on Saturday, the 26th of November, the general election was held, and of course the results are out now, and people are well aware of how it all fell and the results and all. But it was time for us here on Waiheke Radio to take a bit of a look back at the election from a Waiheke perspective. And of course, people will be well aware that Denise Roche was elected as a Greens MP and is now in Parliament. But of course, we also had another candidate here on the island standing for Parliament, standing in the election, Alan Davies, who stood for New Zealand First. Welcome along, Alan.
Thank you.
So, Alan, tell us a little bit about your involvement with New Zealand First. How long have you been involved with the party?
I've been a member of the party for between 8 and 10 years.
And how did that come about? Because you had some involvement in the Labor Party in the past, haven't you?
Very much so. I was, for many years, very involved with the Labor Party. But it's one of those things that, over time, I decided that they were possibly a little bit too PC for me, and I was more, if you like, at the right side of Labor rather than the left, and I found that what the New Zealand First Party were putting forward as policies, and that I agreed with them all the way through, and found that, yeah, that was the party that I felt I could support.
Now, it's interesting you talk about policies there, because New Zealand First is a party which is sometimes derided as being a one-man band. You know, it's referred to as Winston First. And to what degree did you feel in the election that you were campaigning for the party, the policies, or the man?
Well, at all the times, in the meetings that I attended and spoke at, it was the party and the party policies. I don't think I mentioned Winston once, or even thought of what Winston might have said personally. He's a character, and I think he's, that's it. He's a charismatic person, and yes, he is a good leader and a good debater. And it's not all Winston. He does need a team behind him, and I'm quite happy to be part of that team.
So some parties have structures where they have member-driven policy. Others, it might be the policy is decided by an executive or by a group of MPs. How does that work in New Zealand First, the policy development?
Well, the policy development, of course, a lot of it is led, of course, by Winston Peters. He's a man of great background and those policies, of course, are then debated within the management, and from there they're developed. With Winston, of course, in the lead, there's no doubt about that. He does lead the debate.
And you're also involved with Grey Power. How close are the links between Grey Power and New Zealand First?
Well, of course, Grey Power, and I've had to stand down through the election. I'm a member of the National Executive of Grey Power, and Grey Power, of course, is apolitical. And they have no problem, of course, with the fact that I was standing for New Zealand First, but I did have to stand down from my position on the executive while the election campaigning was in process, so that the organisation did not appear to be or has come associated with any particular political party.
And what were your feelings overall about the election results?
Very disappointed, of course, that the National Party have got the control they have over New Zealand. Asset sales, of course, which is one of our main concerns. The National Party, we would assume, will now think they have a mandate to proceed with those. That's of great concern. But the best thing, of course, is that New Zealand First are back in Parliament. And we have got 8 seats, and with a bit of luck and the counting of the specials, we're only 0.1% away from having a 9th person in Parliament.
So what do you think that those 9 MPs will bring to this Parliament?
Well, they'll bring a lot of debate, of course, on issues, and hopefully a lot of honesty into that debate. That's the important thing.
And so on a personal level, you're quite keen on standing for election, aren't you? I mean, you've stood for election a number of times for local bodies. Is this the first time you've stood for Parliament?
First time I've stood for Parliament. I was asked years ago as part of the Labor Party about standing, but I never wanted to become a Member of Parliament. And why did I stand this time then, considering I'm a lot older now than I was then? And the whole reason I stood is because I felt very strongly that there needed to be a candidate, and I offered myself for that position. You might notice that I was number 33 on the party list, which is what I wanted to be at that end rather than at the other end, because I felt if they got 30% of the vote, well then yes, I'd be in Parliament, but I was quite happy not to be.
You were campaigning in an electorate which was very hard fought, and you know, two clear contenders there who came very close in the end. You must have felt a bit of did you feel a bit of a gooseberry in some of those debates where, you know, those two candidates were so clearly the focus?
Oh, no, definitely not. I didn't feel like a gooseberry at all. In fact, it was quite interesting that at least three of the places where we all spoke in the campaign, people who chaired the particular meetings actually praised me on being possibly the lead speaker, if you like.
And the other candidates, of course, were pretty much for Labor, National and Green, were pretty much campaigning full time. You were doing this on top of holding down your job.
Oh yes, that's right. Quite happy to do so. Any meetings that were out there, I made it clear to the company I wouldn't be available to work on those days, and that was one of the things. Unlike a lot of people, I didn't have to work a 40-hour week. I could work to fit into what I was doing.
And as I said before, you are fond of standing for election, you know, and most often in local government. You've stood for a number of community boards. Now that there's going to be a by-election for our local board, are you considering standing for that position?
I will give it some serious consideration. At the same time, we had 17 candidates for the last election, and I think that's far too many. And as a result of that, I didn't fare as well as I had in the previous election, and I'm going to look and see who is going to stand, and quite clearly Andy Spence has put his hand up to stand, and depending on who else might stand, I will consider whether I would do so or not. It's not a matter of liking to stand for elections. That's not it. I like to be actively involved in local government, and that is my interest, of course, is local government. Having spent 36 years as an elected member, I believe that in that area I've got quite a bit to offer still.
And looking back on the general election process, people talk about the hurly-burly of politics and that it can be pretty brutal, and we saw that during the election campaign. You know, people don't pull the punches. You were standing for a party where there are a number of people who are quite hostile towards the idea of Winston Peters in particular being back in Parliament. Did you face some of that on the hustings?
Not at all. Not in one place did that come across. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, at least three of the meetings, the comments that came from the people who chaired the meeting were all very favourable in my direction.
And Waiheke missed out on the opportunity, or Auckland Central missed out on the opportunity of having four MPs in Parliament.
Yeah, that was a silly thing. People should have looked at that. The need to think strategically, and they could have had four MPs if they'd really put their mind to it.
Well, thank you very much, Alan. Congratulations on raising the profile of your party and your party's ascent to Parliament. Is it something you're going to continue to be involved in?
Well, already I've spoken to the president of the party, Kevin Gardner, and said now's not the time to sit back and say, good, we've got people in Parliament now, we've got to start looking at the next election and working on how we're going to improve our position as of now, not in 3 years' time.
All right. Well, thanks very much for taking the time for joining us, Alan.
Thank you.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. Well, it's been a long time, it feels like, since I've had the Opinionated Islanders in the studio, but they are back, which is great because we've got a lot to talk about because we've just had a general election and politics, there's nothing more that they like to get into than that. So welcome along, Alex Stone.
Hi.
And Alan Knight.
Great to be back.
We may have been away off the airwaves for a while, but that doesn't mean to say we didn't have opinions and
we
all
had
that
a lot of opinions. Look at all the lovely stuff we've missed. The Rugby World Cup, for example. We never got a chance to really get into all that stuff, but never mind, because there was an election.
Yes, there was. So, okay, so let's start off with, we'll talk about the local stuff and the local angle on it, but let's kind of start off with kind of your overall view of how the election panned out. I mean, I suppose there's two aspects to this, isn't there? There's how it ran and the result. So why don't we talk about how it went? You know, it was a pretty truncated campaign, probably just 4 weeks from the end of the Rugby World Cup through to Election Day. How did you think the campaign ran?
I thought there were interesting elements to it, and for me what was quite intriguing is people I mix with were saying it's the most important election in decades, but there was this enormous level of disengagement. A lot of people didn't get into it.
Yeah, but I mean, the thought that a million voters stayed home on Election Day is pretty disappointing.
Unbelievable. At the same time, where people elsewhere in the world are fighting and dying for the right to do that. So I thought that was strange. But the truncated thing was interesting because there were some elements that could have played out a lot more that had, there were elements of high farce within it which we didn't quite get the full money's worth, like the billboard enhancement of the Greens. I thought it was a wonderful element. They actually improved the billboards, I thought. They got the core message out there, you know. They didn't make them look ugly at all. It was real core message stuff. National should have thanked them. And I don't know if you picked up on that scandal about Sam Mann's painting. That was an interesting little sideline that could have seen a lot more light.
Didn't catch that one. What was that?
An artist in Canterbury called Sam Mann did this amazing painting of John Key slumped dead in an alley. And it was very interesting because it's been hundreds of years since a painting became a sort of a political point. But in this multimedia world, the painting...
Well, I don't know. There was the thing with Helen Clark and a painting a few years
ago. Yeah. But this painting itself is done in a very sort of realistic neoclassical style. But it became a multimedia event where the painting was went on the web. And if you hovered over the painting, various little symbols in the painting... flicked up video clips and each video clip showed John Key lying. So it was quite an interesting angle, but it didn't get enough airtime.
No, I missed that one as well, actually.
Yeah. Must go home and look that one up.
So the one we all got was the bloody teapot.
Well, that was just ridiculous, but I will say this, Fred, it did bring the campaign to life because it was all going rather slowly and we weren't looking like having much of an election until the Prime Minister went and did that stupid thing of going anywhere near someone as toxic as John Banks. What was he thinking of?
Oh, God. Well, this brings to mind the guy's judgment. And also that little climbing onto the moral high ground saying the media were nasty people when it was he walked into a trap of his own making.
Yeah.
You know, it was a joke.
And yeah, if you're sitting in full view in a cafe window, start whining about privacy.
Once again, it comes to judgment because the legal debate, the legal definition of privacy is, if I get the words right, is what a person can reasonably expect. So you can reasonably expect to be private in your garden or your bedroom or your whatever. But in the cafe where you've invited the nation's media, and there were still other punters in the cafe. They say they asked the media to leave, and A, the media didn't have to. But the lady in the pink shirt, one table away. You know, so those two fellows could not reasonably expect to be private in that circumstance. So for him to kind of get onto a kind of fake moral high ground, I thought was
quite
astonishing.
Ridiculous.
But even that, if you went back, just a few years to the Hollow Men scandal, and here, this is the same guy who was happy to take a clandestine $1 million from the excluding brethren and not, you know, keep the media out of it. You know, like, it just didn't wash at all.
So you were saying, Alan, it breathed some life into the campaign, but what about that argument that it actually distracted from the serious issues?
I don't think the serious issues were ever really going to get a look in this time round.
Good point, yeah.
They simply weren't. This is a first-term government who've done reasonably well given the situation with the economic situation worldwide. There was no way that Labour were ever going to get any traction this time round. They had a good 9 years in office. They've had a fairly painful 3 years of infighting. They were not on message, and there was simply no way they were going to win this one anyway. It did come down to really just endlessly going on about asset sales.
Yeah, well, I think there are some other policy things that Labour should and could have got better traction on, like the capital gains tax and so on. But I think I just wanted to pick up on Alan's point about how the teapot hid the serious issues, and the media lost that opportunity, because you may recall a few days after the teapot, John Key walked out on a little media session, and he kept on saying, "I want to talk about trade." And Duncan Garner, bless his socks, keeps on batting on about the teapot. But trade was a big issue. You know, if Garner had been on his game, he would have said, "Okay, let's talk about trade. Tell us about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement," which is sort of going through in secret right now, which is a huge issue. It was a hidden issue in the election. So I think Alan was right. Some of the big issues just didn't make it.
Yeah. But what I have found particularly sad over the last week is watching Labour beat itself up over this. It's like they're all blaming each other for it. And it's not good. They weren't going to win this election. And for them to start behaving as if they ever had a chance. I mean, really, Phil Goff was in the same position that Bill English was in what was it, 2002?
Well, and did a lot better than Bill English did.
You know, there's no way. When your party's been in for something like three terms, you're not going to get back in next time. Not unless the incumbent Prime Minister actually takes to strangling babies on live television. It isn't going to happen.
And it's
We're too stable a country for that.
It's amazing how close he got to blowing it. You know, letting Winston back into the picture with the teapot conversation was just a complete IQ failure.
Well, it was particularly interesting fairly late on election night when Key arrived at party headquarters and gave his little speech. He fronted up to a few media people, and one or two of them were actually going, you know, "Do you feel some sense of responsibility for having breathed so much life into Winston Peters' campaign?" And the way he just veered off topic there, and it's like, I'm just not going there.
But you know, this is going to set up things quite differently, because just going back to what Alan said, Labour had a pretty poor run in the first half of this term. They weren't an effective opposition. But with old Winston barking at John Key, I think things might be a bit lively on the opposition side of things, yeah.
But again, you see, you can't expect a first-term opposition party to be effective. They're just never going to be, particularly not after such a long run in government.
Yeah,
the last 3 years was bound to be a time of stresses and fractures, as the party just sorts itself out and gets itself ready. Next time round, they might have a crack at it. But I think this soul-searching and the beating up of Labour by itself over the election result is a bit misguided.
Well, are they beating themselves up? Because
I think they are.
Is it the media or themselves?
No, they seem to be doing it themselves. I think it was daft in the first place to throw away a capable politician like Phil Goff as sort of first-term opposition leader. Because that's basically shot his career. And I think the man still had a hell of a lot to offer.
Oh, he does. But I do think...
Why couldn't they have talked somebody dispensable like Michael Cullen, somebody with standing in the party who was going to leave anyway?
The caretaker batsman.
Yeah, be the caretaker for 3 years. Then he could have dealt with all of the Chris Carter stuff and all the other little unpleasantnesses that Labour have been going through in the last 3 years. He could have worn all that, gone down with dignity at this election, which the party was bound to do, and then let Phil Goff have his chance to be the one to rebuild it.
Yeah, but I think during the campaign, Phil took too much on himself. I think when he floundered a bit in financial debates, Cunliffe would have been a much better option then. If they'd used Cunliffe a bit more, they might have had more traction on the financial side.
And now, speaking of which, it's also been very surprising this week, seeing the speed with which the Labour Party seems to want to cut Cunliffe off at the knees.
Yeah, interesting.
Because on election night, he was looking like the heir apparent.
Yeah.
But the way in which he's faltered within the last few days has been quite surprising. I'd love to see what's going on behind closed doors there.
The inside word that I've heard is it's because he looked like the heir apparent on election night that he's out of favour now.
Yeah. They say he's a bit too overconfident. But I think this guy Shearer's got an interesting narrative behind him. He's got this sort of Ed Hillary narrative, though. He's the kind of New Zealander who went out overseas and changed the world. I mean, he ran these big refugee camps in Somalia. He's the guy who was down and dirty, did real good stuff, you know, and a lot of practical nous about organizing people on the ground, as opposed to a New Zealander who went overseas and worked for Merrill Lynch. You know, it's quite of a divergent narrative, almost going back to a kind of heroic New Zealander, which might stand Labour in good stead.
I think it very well might, yeah.
Whereas Parker would never have fitted that bill, unfortunately. Although he's a good guy and all that, you know. Just, we're talking about the television perception of these people. Interesting stuff all around.
So what about the other parties? I mean, you know, we've touched on New Zealand First and the demise of Labour. We also saw the Greens
I dispute the word demise. Yeah, Labour aren't dead. They're just regrouping.
Yeah, not demise.
To write them off is...
All right.
It's not a rout or anything, no.
Not accurate,
I think. Yeah, so what about the other parties that got in there? So we got ACT back in.
No.
Not ACT.
ACT genuinely is dead. Now, ACT voter who, you know, ACT have nothing left to offer me.
Well, it's not even
if
an
they
ACT
can't
person,
do better. If they can't do better than Don Brash and John Banks, then, I mean, what's the point of having it?
The point is that
these are the kind of people that I went to ACT to get away from, and they've followed me there. So no, sorry, that's ACT is
for,
done
for me.
For
the
me.
Grand irony is John Banks is not an ACT person at all.
No, he's not.
Because ACT, if you look at ACT and their whole sort of policy development, they've gone for a sort of libertarian, individual responsibility,
non-authoritarian. And
yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
It doesn't get more authoritarian than Banks.
Yeah, Banks is good old-fashioned conservative, you know. So he's not ACT at all, you know. So I think ACT is his.
It is, yeah.
And I must admit, whenever Bill Brash got up and spoke, I laughed at him. I just couldn't help chuckling at the guy. He just seems so out of touch.
He was hopeless. In the debates, he was just wretched. Yeah. I almost caught myself feeling sorry for him, but then I caught myself just in time. Never feel sorry for a politician, is my view.
But for me, some of these minor parties have something ahead of them. Mana, for instance.
I thought Mana did brilliantly.
But if you look at the sort of international trend about the 99% and the dispossessed and the Occupy movement, that's Mana's natural territory, and it can only grow. And I think if you go back to our opening comments about the disengagement with this election, a large part of the disengagement is for young people who feel disenfranchised, just not in touch. And there will be anger as welfare reform and unemployment, you know, as all that starts to bite in this country, there will be anger. The 99% will start becoming a force, and Mana is their natural territory.
And go the Greens, of course. Wow.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah.
That really was a pretty spectacular rise.
Well, the part I liked about the Greens was the billboard. I mentioned the billboards already, haven't I? I think they were great. Did you see what they did to the billboards?
Well, they're disappearing into the bush.
No, the way they enhanced the billboards.
Oh, yes.
They were busted for vandalising the billboards, but I thought they enhanced them to put that beautifully, you know, it was nice, the same typography and the sticker looked like it belonged there all along, and it said, you know, vote National for a brighter future.
Trouble is,
the rich deserve more. You know, that's core.
Did lumber the Greens with a terrible sort of appearance of a double standard there, because they're the ones who were complaining a few years ago when the Exclusive Brethren were taking a sort of an underhand poke at them. They didn't like it, and then one of their own goes and does that.
Yeah.
But
I didn't see it as a big issue.
Credit to the party, actually, for shutting the thing down quickly, not letting it turn septic on them.
Yeah, it could have turned septic, which is...
In the way in which, of course, John Key didn't manage that.
Which is sad, because I thought there was elements of the pointed humour in it. It was great. And when we're talking about billboard defacing, I thought Jacinda Ardern came out of it the best with her billboards were defaced with someone painting hearts all over them, you know, love hearts. I thought that was lovely.
I think that was probably her. So I'm talking to the opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, about the election. Let's turn to the local aspect of the election, the Auckland Central race, a hard-fought race, and sees three MPs get in. And, and also a local, Alan Davies, standing for New Zealand First.
And now, I was most amused by the interview with him earlier on. You know, you had to ask him, is he going to stand for the community board again? And did you really need to ask? Of course he's going to. He won't be able to help himself.
No,
listening to it, I suddenly had this image of a young... Alan Davies as a child, you know, back in the 1890s or something, failing for the fifth time in a row to become classroom blackboard monitor. You know, how do you feel about losing again? Well, you know, I think I fought a good campaign, blah, blah, blah. There's no stopping the guy.
Oh, fantastic. But those people are the lifeblood of democracy. I mean, I think you must understand our chuckling is benevolent. We're not slagging him. I take my hat off to him, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And funny enough...
And it must be said of
first
Alan Davies,
have a legitimate...
You know, no one has a higher opinion of his performance than, well, he does.
Well done.
So it was a hard-fought race. So in the end, just, 500 votes?
Well, I was really surprised.
Could be overturned by special votes. What do you reckon the chances are?
I wouldn't think they will be, but I mean, Nikki Kaye is looking at a hugely reduced.
Well, the tide
there.
Was behind Nikki Kaye, though, wasn't it? I mean, you know, with National sweeping through in the party poll.
Nikki's done well as an electorate MP.
She has.
Even if you don't like the big picture of National's policy package, she's done very well as an elected MP. I met someone who voted Green Party for Auckland Central and Nikki as the candidate, which is kind of almost hard to get your head around.
Split. No, it's not. It's MMP in action.
There you go.
Oh, and of course, this is the other great issue, the defeat of the foolish attempt to remove MMP. I'm just of the view that if you voted against MMP, you don't even deserve a vote. You really aren't smart enough to be allowed anywhere near a polling booth. MMP has been the making of politics in this country.
But this is a long-standing theory of yours, the IQ-qualified vote, isn't it?
Well, yes, I suppose it is. But, you know, once again, and particularly in this election, it was brought home quite vividly, the way in which... both of the major parties MMP has stripped away the crazy element in both parties, leaving National and Labour so firmly squished into the centre that it's a wonder anyone can breathe.
Mm. But at least we're getting some movement on the outside of either of them, you know?
Yeah.
On the fringes. You know,
but this is a nice thing now, of course. It's no matter who gets in, it will be a moderate centrist government.
Yeah.
And the crazies have all been marginalised.
But just getting back to our three MPs for Auckland Central, I think within the MMP environment, we could actually almost look at redefining politics to a certain extent. One thing is one of my hobby horses at the moment is greater marine protection for the Gulf. But I've spoken kānohe te kānohe to each of these candidates, Jacinda, Nikki and Denise. They're all three are totally for it. So here's an issue that crosses, that could, our three MPs could work in a cross-party accord way to fast-track this issue, which there's no debate. It just has to be done. So a normal political contesting shouldn't even be an issue in this. It should just happen because they're all on our side.
So you're talking a fish hugger coalition.
A fish hugger. That is the lovely. I love it. A fish hugger coalition.
It will be interesting to see, won't it, whether Jacinda Ardern is kept in Auckland Central, and you know, because she put a lot of work in there, and she pulled back that vote considerably.
Yeah.
You know, as I say, going against the, you know, with National having the tie behind them, to pull it back to that close was a fantastic effort, and she put a lot of work in.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see whether that's a long-term commitment that Labor make to that, whether they'll, because obviously she's a person of talent, she's a person who's a hard worker, you know, so they might ship her off into another area where they feel that, you know, she can have an impact.
She's going to have an impact. She's a very high...
Yeah, but, you know, are Labor going to give up on Auckland Central, or are they going to say, okay, we're going to stick with Jacinda for another 3 years and have another crack at this?
I think they'd
be crazy to give up on Auckland Central.
Yeah, and I think
right
Labor will come back in Auckland Central.
That result was, you know, that was a lot closer than that.
Well, you would have to say if the party polling was going the other way, behind Labor, then Jacinda Ardern probably would have taken it.
Yeah.
Almost certainly.
Because if you look at the demographic shift in Auckland Central to younger apartment dwellers, overseas students, you name it, whatever, the national... The natural constituency for National is heading out to gated communities in Greenhithe or whatever, and the natural constituency for Labour is more and more visible in Auckland Central. Yeah. So I think Jacinda will take it next time. I certainly do. And I think even if she doesn't, she'll still be a respected person within the Labour firmament.
Mm. And I haven't caught up with it, and I was disappointed the papers didn't run this, was the breakdown of the polling booths on the island. And I know that Rocky Bay went national for the first time. I think Palm Beach did last time, but there were less polling booths this time.
Yeah, but I think...
Yes, I was amazed to get to the Ostend Market on Saturday morning, all fired up and ready to vote. It's like, it's not in here anymore.
But I think looking at the Waiheke polling booth might be one of those false statistics, because... if you think National took one area, say, I think it's more Nikki Kaye who took the area rather than National. You know, she, for all National's, for all of the policy things I might not agree with National, I think Nikki has been an effective electorate MP. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Yeah. Although where it puts her ethically and morally to be behind a leader who's known to fib is an interesting one.
Oh, you know. Big deal. A politician who fibs. I mean, you know. Let's not get too worked up about
that. Look, I'm old-fashioned, Alan. I'm old-fashioned. I think because for me, you can't even begin to seriously discuss policy if you know the guy might not be telling the truth. He might say, we won't put up GST, for instance, and then call it a fiscally neutral switch later. You know, you can't begin to say, find out where he is if the ground's shifting all the time. And there's just been too many times where he's knowingly fibbed, although the raising GST wasn't a lie. Actually, it was just a promise that was broken. Difference.
And what about the, you know, what's going to happen now? So, you know, we've looked at what the campaign, we've looked at the results. What happens now?
Oh, we'll have, you know, three more years of National staggering along, and in 3 years' time, I think there'll be a credible response from the left.
I think
the Greens will certainly change the way things are done. And, of course, having New Zealand First firmly on the opposition benches, it's going to be a noisy 3 years,
definitely. I think the sense of comfort of New Zealand will be severely shaken. I think National have been comfortable for the last while because of this. Over the past 15 years, New Zealand's come to a comfortable place of sort of material comfort and everyone looking like they're okay. But the real social issues will come to light very quickly, I think. And there will be, as I said earlier, I think there will be continuing unemployment. The welfare reforms will make people struggle. A lot of even middle-class people will be struggling financially. I think there will be quite a lot of anger on the streets. The Occupy movement might get some traction and get I think for me the one of the underlying trends in this country has been this growing gap between the wealth and the wealthy and the poor. And I think it's been aided and abetted by policy decisions by National government. And I think in the future that'll hurt us. We'll have some very angry people in this country, some very desperate people, and that'll change our political landscape, I think, yeah.
Yeah. I disagree entirely with everything you've just said. But
well, tell us your view.
Well,
your
vision. Just kind of go to the opposite of what you said, and that kind of sums up how I feel about it. I don't think we're in for that hard a ride.
Yeah,
the next 3 years. I really don't. I think New Zealand is well, sufficiently well buffered.
Well, we are. We certainly are. There's no doubt about that.
Only got to look at what's going on in the States and in Europe.
Yeah.
To know that, you know, all this talk of, there'll be increasing desperation and stuff, that's all a very relative thing.
Yes, I suppose. No, I think I take your point. We are.
Like, oh no, hardship! I can't afford a second latte.
Yeah,
or I can't afford a muffin to go with my tea. Yeah. It is all relative.
No, I take your point, Alan. We certainly started off from a position of being very well buffered and comfortable enough to start with. But yeah, no, good point. Yeah,
I think all that stuff, 8 or 9 years ago, when the about 3 or 4 years ago, when all the economic woes began.
Yeah.
I think that was a good time of taking stock in New Zealand. I think a lot of people started going out and digging victory gardens. I know we did.
Yeah.
and I think that was a good intro to how this next decade's going to be. We are going to have to take care of ourselves a little better.
Yeah. Well, that leads to really interesting things because, you know, if radical change is necessary, we're probably best placed out of any country in the world. We, you know, with our enormous agricultural exports, it means we'll never go hungry.
Yeah. If people stop buying our stuff, great. We'll
just
get
feed
all
ourselves
that lovely lamb and stuff for ourselves.
Yeah. And if the oil economy in the world collapses, for instance, we have got resources to burn that isn't oil. We're the wind power. We're the Saudi Arabia of wind. We've got geothermal. We've got hydro more than any country in the world. We've got all the alternatives lined up and the technology to make it happen. We could change. We could wean ourselves off oil immediately, and we'd never go hungry. So I think you're right, Alan. We got that.
Will we also see the day? And of course, you know, I wouldn't mind this. I would love to be able to go and deliver beer on one of those wonderful old brewer's dray carts with a big shy horse. You know, I think that would be dead classy.
Yeah, and like a big barge, you know, a sailing barge to take the beer up to Puhoi or whatever. Wouldn't that be great? I'll sail the boat. You just make the beer.
But as far as the local stuff goes, now the by-election that looks certain to happen now.
Well, you know, I was thinking, why don't we just not have a by-election? Just say, look, give it to Andy.
Give it to Andy Spence.
Well, I think there's been a change in the rules there because, I mean, I know my initial reaction was that they didn't have to have a by-election. I think that might have been the rules under the former Auckland City. But
yeah,
now
they certainly didn't when Sylvia Hubbard.
They do now, and I'm sure there would have been no one happier than Faith Straw if they didn't have to have a by-election.
Mm-hmm.
But there is going to be a by-election. It's going to be interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, it was a bit of a mess.
There was a lovely little comment which can't go past unnoticed in the marketplace, an interview with Denise Roche, and she thanked Faye Storer for giving her the... She says, I'm in Parliament now because of... which I thought was kind of a nice point.
I love the shameless promotion of Faye Storer and Joe Holmes in the marketplace.
It's
you know, after all this talk about an independent newspaper.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
They are absolutely shamelessly plugging them at every possible turn.
But here's the thing, interesting thing about if there is a by-election, we had so much fun last time with all these candidates. You know, on the one hand, I'd almost put out a plea there that let's, for God's sake, not have 25 green candidates.
Absolutely.
But then again, they create all the interest, you know, so...
Yeah, but, you know, after that last election, I actually hosted a meeting of Denise Roche and all the other sort of more liberal candidates to have a sort of a debrief. And they all agreed that, yeah, you know, we absolutely overplayed our hand. There were too many people just crashing and going, oh, yes, I'll play. I want to be on the board. And whereas the, you know, we found ourselves in that horrible position last time round where for the very first time I felt the politics on the island was polarized left and right. Somehow it's never felt that way before. You know, we've always had 100% independent representation. But there's never been that sense of left and right up until that last election. And I think that there was a certain amount of soul-searching amongst the people gathered on that day. And they all agreed, yeah, we just completely... We didn't think this through. There was no tactical approach whatsoever.
Yeah.
And as a result, only Denise got in.
Well, it would be quite an interesting community-based thing if we decided there should only be one candidate, or maybe two very clear candidates for the by-election. Make it very clear.
Well, because, you know, I mean, to any of you folks who were at that meeting, you know who you are. You all agreed that you should have just all got behind one candidate. Are you ready to make good on that idea this time round? Are you prepared to get behind one person? And, you know, no names here, but Andy Spence really ought to be the guy. I mean, he did have a lot of traction, and he should have got on. Will the left make good on that?
That
sort of green left politics. Well, up with a single candidate.
That sounds like a topic for us to pick up next month. We should be well
it takes
into 82 that by
days,
then.
Apparently.
82 days. So is we should right? be well into campaigning. Then people will have played their hand and let us know whether they're standing. So look forward to that next.
I'm looking forward to it hugely.
It'll be January, won't it?
Yeah.
Will it?
82 days from the day Denise...
So we have to think about that, when we're going to do that, in January.
Yes. Yeah, just not New Year's Day, all right?
No, we might kick off on the second week in January.
But interesting times for Waiheke, because, you know, we should be able to lead our community wishes through our strong community board directly to 3 MPs working for us, you know, and so we could turn this into paradise on earth, couldn't we?
I thought we already had.
All right, Alan Knight.
That's what it looked like looking out of my window this morning.
Outside the studio, it looks like that already.
Alan Knight and Alex Stone, the Opinionated Islanders, with their look back over the general election. Thank you very much to both of you.
Yeah, no worries.
And we'll talk to them again next month, as we say, most likely about what's happening with the local board elections.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7pm and Thursdays at 12:30pm. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.